Dr. John Duffy is with us once again, clinical psychologist, best-selling author of The Available Parent, and the new book, Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety, is available for pre-order now. I always get confused as to when it's coming out. John, when's it coming out for sure?
Comes out for sure September 15th, without question. Amazon has promised me himself.
Yeah. Oh.
Mr. Amazon?
Joey Amazon?
Quite a guy, that Joey.
Yeah, he was Italian.
Yeah.
But it is available for pre-order now. I've been reading through it. I'm not going in order. Is that okay?
It is recommended. Go where you, the
where
juice
I
is.
Need it.
Yep. That's why there is a table of contents.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
And there are some great things. I want to bring something up specifically about, you know, technology and, you know, in your house, you guys don't have TVs in your bedroom.
Right.
So does that make me a bad parent that we have TVs in our bedroom?
No, not necessarily. You know, here's the thing. You know, I try in here to provide guidelines for keeping a lot of communication open. Does that mean you have to do it exactly the way I did or exactly the way the family across the street did? No, every family has a culture. And if you find a culture that works in your home, listen, a lot of separation mm-hmm. is important in families.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's important to be together a lot. It's also important to be apart and for your kids to manage a lot of their time on their own. So sometimes right. having the challenges of, okay, I got a TV in my room, I got a computer, I got a phone, I got homework to do. I want to binge watch this thing. I want to watch these YouTube videos. Now I've got to manage all this stuff. That's
a lot.
It's a lot, but you know, it's really good for kids to be able to do that. It's a really good set of skills for them to put together and manage. So that is not the end of the world. They're just managing a different set of challenges than some other kids might. You know what I mean? But it all serves a higher purpose of getting somewhere.
John, we have a TV production studio in our bedroom. Is that a bad thing?
I suspect the point of that is different than what we're talking
it
about.
It is. But it totally is. You're right. Good
call. That's weird.
Yeah, I guess.
Bottom line is we really try to be the best parents we can be. And it's, why isn't it easy to be a parent? I thought, wow, this is just, you say something, your kids listen. Everything's copacetic, but it's hard to be a parent.
I was giving a talk to parents recently, and this one dad said, it really feels like you're laying in hard on the parents. And I said, no, I think it's really hard to be a parent these days. And he said, I don't know. You're telling us we need to be more available and open, and you know, it seems like you're laying into the parents. And eventually I just asked him, what did you do? Did you do something awful that you need absolution from?
Yeah.
But the truth is, you're right, Wendy. It is really, really hard. And one thing that's changed over the course of a generation is that our parents, they had the keys. They had the keys to the relationship. In other words, if they wanted us to talk, we were probably going to talk, right?
Yeah.
Now, our kids have the keys. They decide the flow of communication. So we know, like, if our kids decide now, if a 15-year-old decides, I'm not talking to my parents, they can shut you out. They can ice you out.
Right.
And there's not much you can do about that other than shift what you do, shift the vibe that you bring to them. So mostly what I'm talking about to parents about isn't specific techniques or whether there's a TV in the bedroom. It's kind of like, do you create this vibe in your house that feels like a sanctuary? You know, like kids right now, you guys can probably feel it. They're super anxious. School's just starting. So there's a lot of juice. There's a lot of energy buzzing around. And those 7 hours a day are a little anxiety provoking. So if home can feel calm for them and feel like, okay, mom and dad have got my back and, you know, I can take a little break and have a cookie and, you know, and then I can get to studying or whatever it is I need to do. That means the world to them. You know what I mean? That centers them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not centered most of the day. They're still trying to figure out, like, what's my locker combination? You know, like, and, you know, where's my history class again? You know, so the more we can bring them some calm and some comfort, they've got plenty of challenges out there. We don't need to add more.
Can you do me a favor? Rewind a little bit to the holding of the keys where you said it used to be it was the parents and now it's the kids.
Yes.
What changed? Why did that change?
I think it's the onset of like social media, having a lot of information at their fingertips and recognizing, oh, we have a lot more power and agency and information than kids used to. They don't necessarily think that thought, but they know that they know a lot.
Yeah, right.
And so when they're told to do something, they have this thought in their mind that we might not have had at young ages, like, well, I'd like to know why.
Right.
Why does the garbage have to be taken out now?
Right.
Why do I have to talk to you right now? I'm busy or I'm frustrated and I think this is just going to escalate. So I'm going to go up to my room until I feel calmer,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I think we were parented out of either a sense of obligation to our parents or a sense of fear or something like that. And kids today, and I think this is the better story, they're not afraid of us.
Right.
And I kind of like that. So we need to create a more collegial atmosphere. In order to gain a grasp on the keys a little bit, yeah, we need to have a kind of collaborative, collegial, likable atmosphere, you know, friendly atmosphere in
yeah.
our homes. And then I think we have a little more agency to get in there and get to learn their worlds a little bit more.
Yeah.
There are still parents out there, though, who want to hold the key and who criticize other parents for wanting to have a conversation with their kids. We don't have to be their best friend. We're not going to be.
No.
You know, the I hate you or you're stupid. Yeah, I know. That's my job.
Right.
But that is our job. But we can still, I just feel like sometimes if you rule with an iron fist, you're not going to get anything back.
I think that's right. I think, and that is really tough because, and I get why a lot of us feel like, well, that worked for me, and I'm perfectly fine now. Things have changed rather rapidly in kids' worlds, you know. I think the smartphone is a big part of that, and I think you know, there's a lot of more academic and social pressures that they're suffering, and so they hold a little more tightly to their own power when they're home. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't always feel powerful outside of the home.
Right.
So ruling with an iron fist just adds more stress to their world. And whereas we might have capitulated to anything our parents said in that regard, now kids are going to walk away. And I've seen that quite literally. I've seen kids get up and walk out of the therapy room
yeah.
if they were told, you are going to treat me this way. You are not going to disrespect me. Some kids are like,
Guess again. This
isn't going anywhere. Yeah, I'm out of here.
Can you address this text? It's called Respect. We actually respected our parents, where kids nowadays have no respect.
Yeah. So I understand that thought completely to the texter because it really looks that way a lot of the time. Here's the reality. Kids, if you get them alone and you get them talking about their parents, about their teachers, they actually have a lot of respect for the adults around them. The discourse, the language is sometimes very different. Sometimes that's on us too. Sometimes we are modeling, you know, in our household, swearing was okay, you know, when George was growing up. And so I couldn't really lay into him really hard when he started swearing at 16 years old, you know? So we have a little bit of a different culture now. That
but
doesn't
John,
mean
it
it's free of
respect.
It
still throws you, doesn't it? When you hear your own children swear, there's part of you that just goes, wait, what did you just say, right?
Especially early on.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And the hard part, I think, as a side note for parents in that regard, is not just to laugh, because it sounds funny to hear
right.
11, 12, 13-year-olds swear,
yeah.
you know? There's a movie with a bunch of boys who are swearing constantly.
Yeah.
And I've heard that's the funny part of the movie is, you know, like how irreverent these kids
right,
are.
Right, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But I get the texter's point. I just don't think that respect is missing as much as it would appear to be.
And all I can say is I fought with my mom a lot. I, in a way, I'm glad I didn't have a girl because I was probably not easy for my mom.
Right.
And I had a smart mouth. But you spend your whole life trying to please your parents.
Right.
So, I mean, respect is shown in different ways now, I believe. And I wasn't very open. I didn't swear at my mom. But if I was a kid today, and I might have.
Right, you might have. But that wouldn't necessarily mean you respect her any less.
Right.
And I think that idea that we want our goodwill from our parents, we want them to think highly of us, every kid I've ever known, and there's hundreds of them, all feel that way. I mean, part of the anxiety of the day is I don't think I'm living up to my parents' expectations, whether they say that or not.
Mm. John Duffy's here. We'll continue this conversation in just a minute or two. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
Bill, you cracked me up.
Yeah, it happens sometimes. Dr. John Duffy's here. He's already got one best-selling book, The Available Parent, but another one is on the way. On September the 15th, you can get Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. It's up for pre-order right now on Amazon. You wanted to talk about, I didn't see this coming, John. I thought I knew you.
Right.
You wanted to talk about what you just saw on an episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
So I'm a big fan of that show. I get a big kick out of, like, you know, Seinfeld's fascination with comedians. And every once in a while, there's a guy I'm not, or a woman I'm not very familiar with. And Brian Regan is one of them.
Hysterically funny.
I was going to say, I knew you
so
guys.
So funny.
Would, yes. And he said the following. He said, in this kind of pithy final moment, I always say that the things you remember in life are the things that happen right after you have butterflies, those butterflies in your stomach. So you should never avoid the butterflies because those are the memory makers, which my wife and I, Julie, we were both just so struck by as such a lovely sentiment.
He's
and
right.
A really good cue, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, so we psychologists spend a lot of our time talking about anxiety is it's a symptom that needs to be controlled with better medication and therapy. And yet here on the counterpoint is, but some anxiety is a good thing. It is a cue that, you know, like, I'm drawn to this. I want to do this. I want to try this. Wendy, you were talking about dating a minute ago.
When you think back of the first time you had a date with someone you're with now, it was nerve-wracking. You're like, oh, I hope I don't say something stupid. Oh, I'm going to see him tonight. Those butterflies are there. And the butterflies continue, but not as intense or as frequently as
right.
that first time you started dating.
Right, right, right.
And
exactly.
good things come after it, sometimes bad. But
right, but it's something to... It's an experience you want, you know, and these comedians talk a lot about how even after 40 years of doing this, I still, every time I walk out there, I have butterflies mm. and I long for that feeling. I live for that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to demarcate the difference between anxiety that doesn't work for you and is your body telling you no. This is not something that you want to be heading toward, and to listen to that, but to also recognize, oh, this is excitement and anxiety, and that combination, I probably ought to move in that direction. This is probably what I'm most drawn to in life, even if it makes me nervous.
So how do you find a balance of the healthiest amount of this for yourself? I'm guessing everybody's quotient is different, right?
Yeah.
It's got to
be.
I
think so. But I think sometimes we err on the conservative side and assume if I feel nervous at all, I don't want to do the thing.
Yeah, right.
And so my press is usually like, let's go on the let's spin this 180 degrees. Let's talk about what it would be like if you did try the thing, if you went toward the thing, if you joined the team, if you got in front of the microphone, if you
mm-hmm.
Got in the classroom or did the job interview.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what you want and you're just nervous to get there or afraid of being rejected or something like that.
Right.
We can work with that. We can overcome some of that stuff. And so I think the quotient's different for everybody, but I think most of us in this day where even I will cop to using the word anxiety far too often. So
yeah.
It feels like this bad, awful thing, right? This foreboding thing. But the truth is, it's not always bad. It's motivating. And sometimes it's telling us that's what you want to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And think about in life, many times we've come to a crossroads. We could do this or we could do that. And I have told my kids to give it a try because if you try and you don't succeed, at least you can check that off your list. If you never tried it, then it's like you spend a lot of maybe the rest of your life wondering, what if I did that?
Right. 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 Exactly. And to both your points, to your point in particular, Bill, like that idea of trying something. So sometimes we get anxious, we catastrophize the result. This is going to be awful if it doesn't go well. But by and large, if we try things, even if they don't go beautifully,
mm-hmm.
nothing catastrophic happens.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an important thing to teach ourselves is like, you know, sometimes our bodies will lie to us by degree.
Right.
And anxiety sometimes will do that. So to calibrate that, you sometimes have to step off the ledge a little
bit. Yeah, sure.
You know? Yeah.
You know what I like doing? When I go to an amusement park and I'm next in line to get on a roller coaster, I like looking at the faces of everybody as their roller coaster is about to take off because you see such a stretch of emotions. Most of the people are very excited and can't wait, and they've been
right.
looking forward to this all day. But there's so many people that are just sitting there, scared, maybe praying, just nervous. And you say, you know that this has made this route thousands and thousands of times. You're going to come back safely, but it's just fun to watch the differences in emotion from people about to go on a roller coaster ride.
Definitely. And to that point, I read a thing recently about the back end of that. So as the roller coaster comes in,
yeah,
the anxiety quotient is way down.
Yeah.
And even people who are real anxious going on that ride the first time are game for going on it again.
Sure. You know,
and maybe even upping the ante. Like, I'll do
succeeded.
That thing with the free fall. Yes.
Right? We got through it and we won.
Yeah, so and that was more again. Fun than I thought, and yeah. I'm glad I overcame the anxiety and did the thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once is enough. I would never keep going. And there's somebody, I don't know who to attribute this quote to, because I read a lot and I listen to you a lot and I see things, but if you're going to try something new, you say, what's the worst thing that could happen? Will I die?
Right.
Because chances are you're not going to die from doing it. So if it goes badly, you know, chalk it off to experience.
When I'm working with people who are anxious, that's usually my metric. You know, will it kill you?
Who told me
will it kill you? If it's not going to kill you, we can probably give it a try.
John, do me a favor. A texter says, can John please repeat the butterfly quote? Now, this came the other day from an episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Brian Regan. Very funny guy. What did
Correct.
He say exactly?
So he exactly said, I always say that the things you remember in life are the things that happen right after you have butterflies. So you should never avoid the butterflies because those are the memory makers.
That's so profound.
Isn't it? Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's true. The things that we most remember.
Right.
We were a little nervous about going in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty brilliant.
You know, in along those same lines, I realized this as a kid, the stuff that made you nervous at some point, that you dreaded and you didn't know what was, if you go like a month in advance and look back at that, you go, I can't believe that made me nervous.
Right.
That thing that I was so stressed out about for days or weeks or months, and it just kind of came and went.
Right. It's almost like you kind of build your scaffolding of resilience, right?
Yeah.
So you start at the bottom and you're like, okay, I did the first thing and I feel pretty good about that. I think I can go up another floor.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's how we become more and more competent and resilient as we go.
You should write a book.
Should I?
Yeah, you should definitely write a book, and you should have it out on September 15th.
I'll write it quickly.
All right.
Also, if you're in the LaGrange area, you will be speaking at Lyons Township High School.
I will.
And that's coming up in September as well?
September 19th, I believe. Yes.
Oh, you got butterflies, John?
I will.
Nervous?
I will
right.
absolutely have butterflies, which means that's the thing I'm going to want
to
do.
Does it make you nervous to do stuff
absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely.
Does it?
Sure.
Interesting.
Sure. So for those of you who are there, watch me 15 seconds before I get started. You'll see it.
You don't get that at all for anything anymore?
I can't remember the last time something like that made me nervous.
The last time I felt nerves, I was introducing Donovan. I got to introduce him as he came out and played at the Paramount Arts Theater.
Well, yeah.
And I was super nervous.
Uh-huh.
And I was prepared. I like to wing things a lot, but something that I'm not 100% familiar with, I want to have something at least written down. I totally get the jitters. You don't get it for anything?
I can't remember the last time
I did. You need to be alive, Bill.
Or you go line up on the scaffolding. Like,
no,
maybe there's something
I
up there.
I can't do that. No, I know what my limits
are. You found your zone.
I did. John, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
That's Dr. John Duffy. We'll take a quick break and then back with more show. Bill and Wendy on WGN.